Hey, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 268th. Goodbye, Charles. My name's Dick Newman. Let's get on with it with something suitable for Charles.
There's a burlesque theater where the gang loves to go to see Queenie, the cutie of the burlesque show. And the thrill of the evening is when out Queenie skips and the band plays a polka while she strips. Take it off, cries a voice from the rear. Take it off, soon it's all you can hear.
Yes, the Andrews sisters there with a tribute to Queenie the stripper. And the boys do want her to take it off. Last week, we decided to go nice and stupid over the Catholics. It's reds under the beds, or Sharia law will be imposed on us by filthy papists or something like that. There's always some threat, isn't there? That collective stupidity is giving Charles a really hard time, particularly with the succession and James Duke of York. We left Charles recovering from malaria after smartly taking quinine. Clever king. Also unwell was Anthony Cooper, Earl of Shaftesbury, and Charles's arch enemy. He's got a tummy ache. In fact, I'm out of time. He got that tummy ache about 20 years ago, but we didn't really care about it then. Cooper went off to see Dr. John Locke, and it was a liver infection. Dr. John Locke knew his stuff, fixed up Cooper, so was offered a position in Cooper's retinue. We care about this now because John Locke is becoming one of the really big names in Enlightenment philosophy. He's big for the Americans, this guy. He's annoyed with me for talking up Tom Hobbes previously. That guy with the life is nasty, brutish and short stuff leading to the social contract. Dr. John, like us, is fine and dandy with the concept of the social contract. It's self-evident in our lives. Doesn't particularly work that well, of course, because it's designed by white men for white men. So if you happen to be a colour other than white or a gender, not male, then it doesn't work quite so well for you as it does for me, sadly. But really, what John Locke is upset about is the setup favoured by Hobbes. And suck on that, John Locke, because I didn't really say much about Hobbes' idea of a political setup because it was crap. So here's how it goes. It actually started with a Frenchie, Jacques Bousseau, who came up with the idea of the divine right of kings. Handy philosophy if your king happens to be named Louis XIV. Divine right is just what it says. God handpicked a very special little boy to grow up and rule the mob in the name of God and with God's authority to do whatever the fuck he likes. Yeah, that stuff sucks. Both of our poms, Tom Hobbes and John Locke, will reject the idea of the divine right stuff. Pretty easy in England, given the track record of our kings. Hobbes rejected divine right bit, but didn't reject the absolute monarch idea. So he's going for philosophical absolutism as opposed to divine right absolutism. Doesn't really matter, because what you get at the end is a guy with absolute rule. He's above the law. Well, John Locke will say both you guys are wrong. We need a constitutional government. That is one where we limit the power of the king and we need to base it on both philosophy and the magic book. Dangerous ideas, John Locke, but well done, lad. Hobbes and Locke then are giving us two models of the social contract. They both thought about how government came about and what authority should the government have over individuals. They will kind of agree on the first, but disagree over the second, government power. Tom Hobbes thought the government needed to be the biggest, baddest fucker in the country. The king needs absolute power and is above the law. That's needed to protect the majority of society. Hobbes thinks without this, we would just be busy killing each other and taking each other's stuff, as opposed to the nobles killing each other and taking each other's stuff. For Hobbes, that's human nature. A bit like our religious weirdo who said that we are totally depraved unless our heart has been quickened by the Holy Spirit. One of the three that is one of the three guys. John Locke will come up with the idea of constitutionalism, that is the limiting of the powers of the government. His start point, of course, is with magic. God creates Adam, gives Adam some natural rights, life, liberty, and property. And as we are all descendants of Adam, that is, we white men, we inherited those rights. No pursuit of happiness yet. That will be a purely US idea. The trouble for us individually is that without some sort of government, we can't individually defend those things. I can say I have a right to this land as much as I want, but if a bunch of hard men want it, well, I'm pretty fucked. So in order to protect life, liberty and property, we organise into a social contract. On that basis, the whole point of government is to protect our life, our liberty and our property. On that basis, government can be limited. If the government fails to protect our life, liberty and property, then the people have a right to revolt. That bit will be emphasised by Thomas Jefferson in the US stuff. The rights of the people to remove a failing government, go back to their original state and start organising a new government. So the difference between Hobbes and Locke is that Hobbes thinks government is to stop us killing each other, while Locke thinks government is to protect our rights. Hobbes thinks an absolute king should have the power, and Locke thinks the people through Parliament should have the power. Hobbes thinks that government power should be unlimited, and Locke thinks it should be limited by constitution. And Hobbes thinks we should never, ever, ever have a revolution. Before we got started on political theory, John Locke had considered the problem of what you do with humans who do the wrong magic show. The current system of cracking down on those humans isn't working. Yeah. He will write a rather marvellous essay on religion, making three points. First, we are humans, and as such, we cannot dependably evaluate the truth claims of competing religious standpoints. That is, we simply cannot say that this particular magic show is the exact right one and all the others are wrong. Second point, then, is that forcing a particular magic show on people won't work. You simply can't make someone change their belief through violence. Thirdly, if you coerce people into doing a particular magic show, that leads to social disorder. It's better to allow diversity. On that basis, the government's job is to give people a quiet time in society. The government has got nothing to do with our eternal souls. Religion needs to be something we can individually choose, and churches, not being government, can set their rules for membership and just be left to get on with whatever. Where we are right now, with total stupidity going on in England over the invented Catholic threat, you might think that Locke's ideas on religion will be going straight to the shredder. But no, big social change takes time, and by the next century, other European countries will be green with envy when they look at England and its religious tolerance. It's why most democratic nations today have religious freedom in their constitution. Whatever magical beliefs other people have is not our business, my dear listener. And certainly, or hopefully really, nothing to do with government. Two big points so far for the Americans to put in their constitution. Freedom of religion and right to bear arms. That second one is particularly to give people the power to terminate the US government by force if necessary. Let's turn to Locke's third big idea, which is education. First thing he will do is toss out the prevailing view that we are all born with certain knowledge. Knowledge about God, religion, morality, yada blah, who cares, it's bullshit. No, says Locke, our brains are a nice blank canvas when we are born ready to receive information. In fact, the correct answer, my dear listener, just so you know, is our brains are born to survive, that's it. We are looking for survival the minute we're born. Back to John Locke. Everything we end up knowing comes to us from inputted data we receive from the outside world. Education then is crucial as to how we will turn out. Naughty or nice, useful or useless, it all comes down to education. The most important time for Locke is early education, where we form impressions of the world and those have long-lasting consequences. Just that bit is the foundation of modern parenting. Locke will take on curriculum. Good on you, John. He isn't fond of teaching kiddie stuff that he thinks isn't useful. Latin, Greek, music, poetry and so on. He thinks they need to be taught utilitarian subjects. Stuff that they will actually use in their lives. Science, ethics, business and what we might now call psychology. how to calm yourself, how to be kind and help others. Then you continue your learning for the rest of your life. Not in educational facilities, but the school of life. Hard to argue with this guy on that. He says the government should not be tyrannical. We should have toleration of religion and that kiddies should be nurtured. Locke's at his height right now and will die in 1704 as one of the most famous men in Europe.
As free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart.
Oh yes, doesn't that make you feel good? A bit of Matt Munro there, reminding you, my dear listener, that you were born free. But were you? Look, even boring old white men like me weren't born free. It's all very well having a social contract, but I was born into a system that was already established. I didn't have any say in the fucking social contract. And what the fuck say do I get now? Bugger all is the answer. It's just that I get a better deal than women or people who aren't white. But that is one of the big things for the US. This life, liberty and freedom. Liberty's a big thing. They bang on and on about their freedoms. They're no freer than you or I. This is turning into an old man rant. I better get back to Charles. I reckon Charles wouldn't mind a bit of religious toleration right now. Now, where is everybody? Let me check. James Duke of Monmouth came back from his glorious campaign in Scotland. He'll hang around being all certain that he's going to be named as heir to the big chair after all that cheering and waving from the mob. Nah, he's off to The Hague to do a deal with William of Orange, so annoying Charles. He didn't have permission. Lord of Arle up in Scotland will resign and James Duke of York will leave Brussels and head up to Scotland. A Tudor, we've had Stuarts enough. None ever reign like old Bess in a rough. Yes, our satirists are still having a go at Charles and the succession. It's worse with the Green Ribbon Club with George Villiers, Duke of Buckingham, putting on a bit of theatre with the theme being extermination of the Catholics. The centrepiece of the show was the Pope himself. His figure cost £40 in wax alone. Indeed, the total cost of the whole show, including claret for spectators, was nearly £2,500. That's a huge amount for the times. Figures of devils attended the Pope. Hail, Holy Father. But more ominous to the court were his other attendants, nuns, the Pope's whores. They're labelled courtesans in ordinary. Yeah, it's a reference to Charles's Mistress Louise. But the whole thing was a big show with great special effects. Out on the street, we have effigies of Jesuits with signs saying our religion is murder, rape and rebellion. We have an effigy of our dead Sir Edmund Berry Godfrey with a sign saying, Avenge me. And even though it isn't Guy Fawkes Night, plenty of popes are going onto bonfires. Oh, and here's another fucking plot. Tom Dangerfield. Makes a nice change from that fucking Titus Oates, I suppose. This dickhead will try it on that Shaftesbury is the chief's plotter. Even in our state of stupidity, that one is too much, so Tom Dangerfield will switch to the Pope is plotting the death of our glorious banger-in-chief, Charles. It's called the Meal Tub Plot. 10 points for an inventive name, I guess. Charles will dismiss it all as dangerous nonsense. Charles is in no mood to recall Parliament until shit settles down. Shaftesbury will call a Privy Council meeting. He'll kick up a fuss about James Duke of York going to Scotland, and Charles is over the James Duke of York bashing. Shaftesbury will be told to just fuck off. The council will be told that Charles won't call Parliament until next January, that's 1680. Before you know it, he's getting encouraging messages from France over, and oh, bugger it, Parliament can wait till November 1680. About the same time, James Duke of Monmouth will come back from The Hague, again without permission. He's a very naughty boy. Monmouth reckons that with York up in Scotland nicely out of the way, he'll be able to get a gang together to get him into the succession. And Charlie's Angels will support him. Nell Gwynne, who was keen to up her Protestant profile, and even Louis de Querouel. Louise had been copping a lot of shit, including rumours of a secret marriage with Charles, so that her lad would go on the big chair. She's at risk. There's accusations that she's hiding filthy priests and we want her gone. So Louise gave James, Duke of York, the boot to support Monmouth. None of it helped Monmouth. Charles is totally pissed off with him, and there go all his nice jobs. February 1680, and without Parliament to hinder him, Charles will sanction Duke of York to come back from Scotland. And a pamphlet war is on by the supporters of the two Jims. We're back on about Charles having married Lucy Walter, making Monmouth legit. He didn't. Get over it. Oh, yes, he did, we all say. Look at how Duke of York tried to deny that he married Anne Hyde. And look at how Ted Four said that he hadn't married Eleanor Talbot so that he could marry Betty Woodville. It's all proof that Charles married Lucy Walter. No, it isn't, you dickheads. The proof is in the black box. We all know it is. Has anybody seen it? No, nobody knows where it is, but we all know that it exists, and we all know it surely has the proof. Just like Obama ignored all the birth certificate calls for years, then finally caved, Charles has ignored this thing for years and years and will cave with a written declaration. For the voiding of any dispute which may happen in time to come concerning the succession of the crown, I do here declare in the presence of Almighty God that I never gave nor made any contract of marriage, nor was married to any woman whatsoever, but to my present wife, Queen Catherine, now living. Whitehall, 3rd day of March, 1679, Charles R. Now that should put the end to it for all sensible people. Trouble is, sensible people are thin on the ground. It didn't quite work for Obama, and it didn't quite work for Charles. Once we humans have become stupid on something, it can be remarkably difficult to get that stupidity out again. With Obama, he's the most powerful guy on the planet, so of course he can get a fake birth certificate. And Charles, really, is hardly the most honest guy on the planet, so, yeah, of course he could sign off on a bit of propaganda. Charles is getting really cheesed off with it all, so it'll be a strongly worded letter to the editor. You shitheads claim there's a marriage certificate. Put up or shut up. You shitheads have named several lords who were supposedly witnesses of this alleged marriage. They've all been examined and said, no, it's bullshit. Though I am confident that this idle story cannot have any effect in this age, let me stop you right there, Chuck. People want to believe it's true, and the facts can't get in the way of belief. Ah, oh dear, let's move forward in time. 1680, and now is the spring of our discontent. Halifax will write that it would be more pleasant in a wasp nest than being in London. Everybody's angry with everybody else. Charles's household aren't getting their pay because the royal piggy bank is empty. 7 more Catholic priests can be executed to give the mob something to cheer about. Let's try foreign policy. Charles is looking at treaties with Spain, the sausages, and the Spanish lowlands, and that would surely piss Louis off. Louis's lad, the Dolphin Louis, has married a Bavarian pastry named Maria Anna Victoria, while brother Philippe, Duke of Orléans, married Elizabeth Charlotte, daughter of Charles Louis of the Palatinate, and so granddaughter of Elizabeth Stuart, who wanted to call herself Queen of Bohemia. Point is, Charles will say nothing about the Dolphin's marriage, and that lets Louis know we're not BFFs anymore. Sausage Emperor won't be making a treaty. He's an absolute monarch, so he wants to see what happens between Charles and Parliament. England might pop back to being a republic the way it's going. It isn't just the Emperor who thinks that way. Duke of York wrote to William of Orange on the same lines. Charles, though, is on the attack. He's changed the way judges were picked so he could have more say in getting royalist judges in. That's the way to go. That's what the Republicans have been doing for a few years. It's working a treat for them. Charles is also looking to reissue town charters to get royalist names on those charters. Now, these are the guys who get to pick who runs as an MP. He's doing well, isn't he, the lad, with his attack? Charles Corse does have support around the place, and so Tories will start matching Whig propaganda pamphlets with Tory propaganda pamphlets, with that Titus Oates getting some stick. Well-deserved stick there. In Scotland, we get another uprising. Bunch of guys calling themselves Cameronians after their leader, Richard Cameron. They have put off their oath to Charles and are promising a terrorist campaign. James Duke of York will pop back to Scotland to keep them under a bit of control. Domestic terrorists are a chore to control, but James will get a good name for keeping the peace. Keeping the peace makes you popular. Charles's guys are working on parliamentarians, trying to calm everything down. Anthony Cooper, Earl of Shaftesbury, will have a go at indicting James Duke of York for being a Catholic, and Louise de Keruel, got it that time, for being a prostitute. It's just provocation. Justice Scroggs must be firmly on Team Charles now. He will discharge the jury, but a worried Louise will tell the exclusionists, "Hey guys, I'm totally on your team." Charles will become brooding, solitary and secret, a bit like Batman. He is not a happy chappy at all. In all this keeping quiet, both the exclusionists and the anti-exclusionists think Charles is on their team. In goes a second exclusion bill, and neither side get his support. Charles had called Parliament for a different reason altogether. Tangiers is under threat from the Muslims. It's going to need cash to defend it. It needs cash, guys, as do I. Hey, a big fat tax would make us all friends.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And in the middle of negotiations, you break down.
Now stop your stupid singing, Charles, says Parliament. We don't give a fuck about your piggy bank or Tangiers. We want to vote on the exclusion bill. Carried. Then it will be a motion that exclusion doesn't apply to James, Duke of York's two daughters. Charles will write to Parliament. Look, guys, come up with some other form of protecting the true religion, but leave the succession alone. Fuck that, say Parliament, and vote that James's daughter Mary of Orange will be the heir to the big check. James Duke of York will come back to London and Charles will send him away again. James Duke of Monmouth is doing a progress thingy, trying to work up support. The Commons gave the bill the third reading, then dropped the succession bit. Okay, on to the Lords. It's not only Charles who has been copying it from the Commons, the Lords have too, and they may be up for a bit of telling the Commons to get stuffed. Charles will be very interested in the Lords' debate. He'll start off by sitting on the big chair, then he's going to move to a comfy chair near the fire, then we'll find him wandering around with a word here and a word there. Exceptional behaviour for a king to lobby on his own behalf. It comes down to the wire with Shaftesbury and Halifax trading verbal blows. Does my lord realise that the James Duke of York is a Catholic? Surely do, Shaftesbury, old mate, which is why I voted against the Declaration of Indulgence, which you voted for. And I voted for the Triple Alliance, which you voted against. His piercing wit and pregnant thought, endued by nature and learning taught, to move assemblies so much the weight of one brave man can do. It's going to be a 10-hour debate, and every time Shaftesbury spoke, Halifax knocked him down. Bill will be defeated 63-30, and so it's settled again. Duke of York is heir to the big chair. Charles will tell Parliament. Men ordinarily become more timid as they grow old. As for me, I shall be on the contrary, bolder and firmer, and I will not stain my life and reputation in the little time that perhaps remains for me to live. Oh yeah, he's getting feisty. Charles will be back to laugh some parties. This was also a defeat for James, Duke of Monmouth. Halifax had been a bit cruel when talking about James, but Shaftesbury isn't done yet. Next day he'll be pushing for a divorce from Queen Catherine, so that Charles can marry a nice Protestant girlie and knock out a brand new heir to the big chair with the right religion. Lord's not fussed on that idea, and Charles will have dinner with Catherine instead of Louise. Speech time to Parliament. While you're all squabbling over the succession, Tangiers is going to the Muslims. I was looking for a united front, but you just want a food fight amongst yourselves. I gave you assurances about religion and you gave me fuck all. How do I get cash out of you and what do you want in return? Sort yourselves out, you layabouts. One thing he didn't mention at all was the Commons' request to change the tenure for judges. They've noticed what Charles is doing, trying to get loyal royalists into those jobs. They'll have a crack at impeaching Lord Chief Justice Scroggs, but the Lords will refuse to put him in the slammer. If your memory's working, they have those five Catholic guys hanging out in the slammer. Five loyal to England type lords who hadn't done a cracker to get them in the slammer. Yeah, those guys. They haven't had their habeas corpus yet, but even so, scaffolding has been erected ready to have some heads off. The Commons want to move against Lord Stafford. Titus Oates will line up some witnesses to corroborate his claim that Stafford was going to be the paymaster for the Pope's army, which will arrive any day now. In these distracted times when each man dreads the bloody stratagems of busy heads, when we have feared 3 years, we know not what, till witnesses begin to die the rot. Yeah, some people are starting to get over this stupidity, but is it enough? Lots of people have invested heavily in this scare campaign. There goes Lord Stafford, a decent and harmless old man. 29th of December, 1680, his head's off. Behold the head of a traitor. Yeah, but don't be cheering. You're supposed to cheer when we say that. Are there really weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? Lord Stafford wrote a last letter to his daughter and it'll be published, so lots of people will boo-hoo-hoo. Charles is saying Stafford was murdered. Boo-hoo-hooing for Charles, who didn't try for a royal pardon. But that might be fair enough. The pardon probably wouldn't have worked with these fuckers, and perhaps his enemies have scored an own goal. But they aren't done. Charles had made it the merciful beheading, causing complaint from the Commons. They wanted the poor old bugger to have the full tortured death. Those other lords will spend 5 years in the slammer, except for one who died in there. Charles will dissolve Parliament and say, we'll meet again in Oxford in March, and fuck you very much. Meanwhile, the Green Ribbon Club have ramped up the propaganda, and they're pretty good at it. Okay, new Parliament, and slightly less Whigs in it. Charles is hoping that the trend is reversed. Parliament, Oxford, Royal Territory, no London mob. Good move, Charles. Here's a quote from a weak MP. Hang Tangier. We resolve to raise no money to pay the whores at Whitehall and arbitrary government. And as the King has called us to Oxford, we know the next will be to York. But for all that, we will give him no money. Tough shit, mate. Look, it's the King's prerogative to hold Parliament wherever he wants. A bit of music there from The Time, written by that very famous Anonymous. But that's what's going on with Team Royal. It includes Nell Gwynn, Louise de Keruel is there, loyal lords, the King's players, and plenty of hard men looking hard. Team Parliament will come in and we can see which one are the Whigs. They're the guys with the blue satin bows with the word no popery, no slavery on them. And they've got hard men too. Off we go to church with Team Royal on one side and Team Whigs on the other side so we can glare at each other. Journalists have turned up too. Pamphlets have been brought and cartoons showing a half-Jesuit, half-Satan James Duke of York setting fire to London is on them. 21st of March 1681, Charles will open up his speech nicely. I'm not looking to use arbitrary government and I won't tolerate it in others. Yes, I'm looking at you, Whigs. Even so, nothing you can do will make me fall out of love with you. Remember, it was that sweetheart Parliament who brought me back as king. Now, just work out something in the succession to ensure we stay on the right religion without upsetting the monarchy. Really, Parliament should be thinking of something like a regency, maybe. James Duke of York can be king, but with someone else calling the shots. Either that or a constitutional monarchy. Why be stupid fuckers? Shaftesbury in return will go straight on the attack. How about a relief bill for non-conformists like Presbyterians and Puritans and other Protestant-y types, but not Catholics? The Commons just want to talk up the exclusion again. Look, it's gone nowhere for years, but why don't we just keep banging on about it? But enough guys will say, hang on, maybe Charles is onto something here. Shaftesbury then needs to come up with something. Charles had issued the challenge. Come up with something that satisfies Parliament and satisfies me. You're the guys making the fuss, so you come up with a solution. How about getting churchy guys to say Mary Poppins and make the Duke of Monmouth legit? Nice. That can divide the Whigs, because some want Mary of Orange on the basis that she has a nice Protestant husband who can tell her what to do. William isn't Catholic like his uncle Duke of York and looks nothing like his granddad Charles I. Another guy will come in with a Catholic plot. Oh, dear me. Pretty crap stuff. Duke of York is planning to assassinate Charles, and Charles has already converted to Catholic. Those are kind of contradictory, so even the Commons can see it's crap. Commons will say, hey, Lords, impeach this guy. Lords will meet and say no. Charles comes into the Lords. Neither the King or the Lords have their fancy House of Lords clothes on, given that we're away from London. It's all nice and friendly, and Charles will send a black rod to summon the Commons, who are debating the exclusion stuff still. In they come, and Charles has managed to do a quick change and is now in his fancy parliamentary clothes, and he's got his toys and silly hat. All that stuff is needed for a dismissal of Parliament. And he's done it. Parliament is dissolved after 7 days. Charles said, all the world may see what a point we are come, that we are not like to have a good end when the divisions at the beginning are such. Charles has just called the Commons out as a bunch of squabbling schoolboys who can't find common ground to even start finding a solution. So piss off, you lot are useless. Charles was renowned for being polite and gracious, but this is the new Charles. Charles will leave being all smiles outside, and out come the Commons looking very glum. Charles will do a midnight flit to Windsor, and next day all the Commons can think to do is go home. And that's it for King Charles II in Parliament. He is definitely over it. He played that in pretty well. The Whigs have failed at anything. Internal squabbling got them a result of nothing. They focused on fighting the Lords and the succession, and that's not even their job. A couple of days later, and the news is being spread around the country, and in comes pocket money from Louis. The message Charles sent to the mob was basically, look, I love Parliament. It's a great idea, but these current guys couldn't organise a banging in a brothel. They are stuck on the old Commonwealth Republican ideas, and those ideas were useless. You've seen it. Good PR, and there will be a bit of a turn to royal support. A new paper will come out, and it's bagging the Whigs. Charles and Catherine will be out and about, and we're back to cheering and waving. Articles in the paper about our lovely Queen, who had to put up with buckets of shit tossed at her by Parliament, and has come through smelling like a rose. Charles is still on the warpath, though. It's not with bangy weapons. 'Tis now come to a civil war, not with sword, but law. Both sides were into false testimony, carefully selected juries, planted evidence and manipulation of legal proceedings. It's all crap. We may not be ready to like James Duke of York's Facebook post just yet, but we're not quite so stupid on the Catholic plot stuff anymore. A couple of anti-papist informers will have another go, and Charles will say, those guys should be executed. And executed they will be. Fair enough, they're just stirring up fear. But that's a blow to Shaftesbury. Shaftesbury will strike back with the sad case of our Irish Archie Oliver Plunkett. He'd been accused a few years ago of getting a French invasion happening. Total bullshit. His followers over there in Ireland told him to do a runner, but the Archie said no, I need to stay with my flock. So it was into the slammer, then he was tried in Ireland, but that went nowhere. Maybe he thinks he's guilty. Shaftesbury then pushed him to come to England, and he did hang out in the slammer there. Shaftesbury knew he'd be hard-pressed to get a conviction on this guy, so he sent the poor old Archie to the absolutely filthy Newgate prison, where he can get the trial done at Westminster. As usual in these stitch-up trials, there'll be no defence counsel and no defence witnesses. They're in Ireland, and we're not prepared to wait for them to come. He'll be denied access to the prosecution evidence. Let's have a trial where the Archie will say, "Hang on, I'm Irish, so you can't try me here." I guess Julian Assange will be telling the Americans that too and have about as much luck as our Archie. His next attempt will be to point out that the prosecution witnesses all happen to have criminal records. Judges will say this isn't the right place for those complaints. Well, where the fuck is the right place, mate? Time for the verdict. Guilty of high treason, of course. Plenty of people will be in to see Charles to tell him it's a total stitch-up and he should pardon Plunkett. But politically, it could stir shit up like he's a Catholic, Archie. Charles just wants peace and quiet. Arthur Capel, Earl of Essex and former Lord Lieutenant of Ireland who had participated in getting the Archie arrested, will come in and rip it up, Charles. Say, mate, look, you've got to pardon him. He's innocent. Charles will say, his blood be on your head. You could have saved him, but would not. I would save him, but dare not. And that's a fair call, really, for Charles. It's going to be the full torture death for the Archie, but he'll be sainted in 1975. There are a ton of St. Oliver Plunkett churches, schools, sports fields, streets and whatever. So Charles failed to save an Irish Catholic, but his eye is on Shaftesbury. Charles will have a crack at treason, saying that he brought hard men to Oxford. Yeah, that was a bit weak. Also, it will be a Bill of Association, which we haven't heard of since the bad old days in Scotland under Mary. This bill is a list of people who agreed to help Shaftesbury prevent the Duke of York becoming king. Promising, so Shaftesbury will be arrested. Shaftesbury will offer to go into exile in America, but Charles is over him. So, no, mate, you're going to have a trial. Charles's old forgiveness and flexibility won't be used here. The new Chief Justice will try his hardest, but it's an all-wig jury, so they'll acquit. Charles should have held his fire until he got more dirt, but it's a bit of a known goal with people cheering and waving Shaftesbury's release. It was James, Duke of Monmouth, who put up bail for Shaftesbury to get out of the slammer while awaiting trial. Charles will feel more than a bit betrayed by that. Charles will have a nice fiddle with the council election in London. We'll get Tory sheriffs elected, ready to get some new charges going against Shaftesbury. The sheriffs also get to pick the juries, so we've been having all-wig juries. Now we can expect Tory juries. Shaftesbury, though, by now is old and unwell, so he's going to do a runner to Holland and just die a few weeks later. The Whigs are still divided, as happens to humans. You've got your Whig monarchists who support Monmouth, your Whig Republicans who don't want a monarchy, Protestant extremists and various radicals. With all that mix, there's no hope that these guys could come up with anything positive to offer. But they sure can be negative, risking political chaos and violence. James, Duke of Monmouth, will be out and about in a carriage. Carriage will drop him off and keep going with his mates. Out come a couple of guys and they'll fire shots into that carriage, killing one guy. That was the Duke of York's faction. Charles will have the killers executed at the site of the murder. Monmouth will just shrug it off and keep on looking to get support. It's all going badly, and really those Whigs have stuffed themselves up by fighting amongst themselves.
I am hopeful, and I am inspired. It reminds me that ahead of anything else, that what unites us as Americans is far greater than anything that divides us. I've taken on the far right and stood up to those in my party. I've battled congressional leadership who wanted to spend too much. I've always rejected the politics of demonizing the other side.
That's weird, a Democrat looking for re-election, promising to be nice to the Republicans, but fight the Democrats.
Senator Maggie Hassan is on a mission to try to ease the pain at the pump.
She wants to suspend the federal gas tax for the rest of the year.
I'm taking on members of my own party to push a gas tax holiday, and I'm pushing Joe Biden to release more of our oil reserves. That's how we lower costs and get through these times.
Well, it seems to be catching on with the Democrats that want to fight their own party. At least the Republicans are nicely united.
and today we're going rhino hunting. Join the MAGA crew. Get a rhino hunting permit. There's no bagging limit, no tagging limit, and it doesn't expire until we save our country.
Okay, the Republicans are nicely united except for that guy who wants Republicans who do acknowledge King Donald as their Lord and Saviour to kill Republicans who don't acknowledge that King Donald is their Lord and Saviour. All going well in the US then. Charles must be finally worried about his own safety. He'll accept a gift of some Swiss guards from Louis. Oh, just what every king wants, some Swiss guards. Some of the palace entrances will be bricked up. He's spending more and more time at the fortified Windsor Castle. Local JPs will be removed and replaced by totally loyal yes men. 11 High Court judges will be sacked and replaced by guys who know their place. One of these will attack on local government looking for cases where a local government had failed something in their constitution. If we can find something, doesn't have to be much, then we can revoke their charter and a new charter can be issued that has royal control worded in it. The big one will be London, who have to hand back the charter issued way back by Bill the Bastard for a new and improved version. All we need now are some high-profile cases for the mob. The Whigs had Titus Oates and his bullshit, but here comes Josiah Keeling, Anabaptist for the Tories. It's talking about an assassination attempt on Charles and his brother. The Rye House Plot. All marketing's done all right there. Arrests will be made, including three big names. Lord Russell, Arthur Capel, Lord Essex, and Sir Algernon Sidney. Arthur Capel will say, I won't get any justice here, and just cut his own throat. Yeah, he knew what was going down. That, though, makes arrests look guilty. Lord Russell can go and have his head off. Sir Algernon can hang out in the slummer for a few months, waiting for a nice fair trial. Yeah, he doesn't stand a chance. Chief prosecution witness was high-profile Whig Lord Howard, who Sir Algernon had got out of trouble previously. Lord Howard had been arrested then, heavy to turn state's evidence, and that's it. Sir Algernon will be made dead. If his name is tickling your memory, then it was he who brought Lucy Walter, Monmouth's mum, to Charles all those years ago. Now he's dead for his remote connection to Monmouth. Charles, who was forgiving for most of his life, has had a bit of revenge on the Whigs. James, Duke of Monmouth, was implicated in that Rye House plot, found guilty by a grand jury, and a warrant put out for his arrest. Charles, though, didn't think much of it, and maybe he's going to be chasing down James, Duke of Monmouth. We all know where he is. He's hanging out with his mistress, while the other guy's got done and executed, and Charles will have him back soon enough. It was his missus who went to Charles to do the begging. Pretty nice of her, given his behaviour as a husband. Yeah, she's begging for his life while he's banging his mistress. Charles will flick James off to Holland for a while. It's supposed to be a bit of exile, but William of Orange will be all friendly, fucking up the exile idea. Oh well. England is at peace. Parliament isn't happening, and Charles is hanging out with the angels. It seems that by now he's pretty much banged himself out. No more juice in the tank, but he still loves the ladies. He's also, of course, got a swag of kiddies, even if none of them are legit, and they keep him nice and busy. The problems remain, but they've been stuffed in a basket in the basement, and Charles isn't looking to fix them. The common smellies are calming down. Their original panic about a Catholic invasion has turned a bit to scepticism. Where are all these fucking Catholics that are coming to kill us? Then scepticism turns back to fear, because who knows who may be named as a plotter, with Titus Oates running around, and also fear that we might go back to civil war, seeing how Charles isn't playing with Parliament. There's also peace in Europe, and with peace comes, believe it or not, prosperity. Trade is up, the parliamentary embargo on Frenchy products has expired, and luxury goods are coming in. Okay, I've painted you a nice rosy picture of peace, love and lentils, with various people being in their normal state of scared about events that haven't happened, aren't likely to happen, but will be scared anyway. Now if I toss in the various pamphlets, you would have a very different opinion. Propagandists are cleaning up big time. The country was awash with inflammatory and seductive canards whose influence was undermining society. So fond are men in these days that when they will deny their children a penny for bread, they will lay it out for a pamphlet. And it did so swarm, and the temptations were so great that no man could keep tuppence in his pocket because of the news. Yeah, we've gone into a media frenzy. And Charlie's Angels are, of course, an easy target, but the pamphlets are also against women generally. They become more prominent in society, and we men don't like the women getting uppity. Why art thou poor, O king? Embezzling cunt, that wide-mouthed, greedy monster that has done it. Yeah, they're not polite about the angels. Charles is also accused of incest with his daughter by Babs. Louise is a monster who has set a tidal wave of debauchery and lust throughout the land. Yeah, women have turned out to be the archenemy instead of Catholics. These women have stuffed up the entire government, and we should export them all somewhere and have a nice, sensible kingdom with boys only allowed. I kid you not, my dear listener. They're writing this sort of shit. Get rid of all the women out of England. Fuck me. Oh, okay. That last bit was from a play, not a pamphlet, really. In this play, the king orders the men to have sex by buggery only, so the women are left with just dildos or animals for sex. Oddly enough, that play will never be performed. By oft-fermenting cunt so big doth swell, that prick works there like a clapper in a bell. Apart from Catholics, then, we are obsessed with sex and making the point that, oh, sex is revolting. Who'd do it? Obviously, sex is not revolting, my dear listener, unless you're doing it wrong. Women are the problem, and Charles is ruled by women. It'll blow over a bit, and Charles will do well ignoring it at a time when he's turning into a grumpy old man. His ministers are all busy going after his enemies, so he's even doing a bit of kingly work. Yeah, he's finally learned how to do the work. Louise de Carroll will emerge as the king's mistress and start doing jobs that perhaps Catherine should be doing. Diplomacy, smoothing things among Charles's council, bringing in Tories to be on the council while moving Whigs out. She'll feel secure enough to visit France, and she'll be treated like a royal over there. Queen Catherine will write to her brother, King of Portugal, saying how marvellous it all is and how happy she is. Catherine will score a spectacular birthday party. Last big bash of the rain. She's also excited about a new building project. Charles has Christopher Wren doing a 160-room palace at Winchester. It's to be the English Versailles, so Catherine's busy looking at IKEA catalogues for the furniture and curtain fabrics. You won't be able to see that English Versailles. The money will run out, so it won't be finished. Then a fire in 1894 will see it gone. Now, Gwyn will go for a run with Charles and Catherine to have a look at the works at Winchester. Dr. Tom King, churchy type, was to provide accommodation, but he refused Nell, saying, I can't have a woman of ill repute here. Now, Louise would have probably gone Burko if it was her, but Nell's a I give zero fucks type. And Charles will just buy her a house in Winchester to go with the one she's got at Newmarket and the other one she's got at Windsor. She's doing all right, Nell. Apart from all this stuff, Charles is learning to live moderately. Well, moderately for a king. He wants to survive on the Frenchy pocket money and will cut expenses rather than look to go back to Parliament. His campaign of issuing new charters in towns has been met with popular support among the common smellies. Tories are getting into councils to ensure Tory candidates would be picked for whenever we do decide to hold an election. Livery companies in London have also got the message, and they're surrendering their patents voluntarily with a plea for a reissue. Charles will take back control of appointing bishops. From the Whigs' point of view, not only have they failed, It's worse for them. Well deserved defeat, I reckon. The Green Ribbon Club have just faded away. And we're patrolling the streets because we're over all those Pope burnings, so no more of those thanks. William of Orange will be making a visit and the Whigs will invite him for dinner. Don't know why. It's not like they thought his bum would be the one they want on the big chair. They're just still anti-James Duke of York. And that's the type of thinking that got them where they are. Charles will just invite William for dinner on the same night. And the Whigs are stuffed. The Whigs concentrating on James Duke of Monmouth still. James has continued to be a dick. He'd been sacked from his jobs, arrested for disturbing the peace and generally annoying his dad. He's also been parading around the country again. Oddly enough, that's working in favour of James Duke of York, who is being seen with a bit of sympathy. He stands for the old values of monarchy and hasn't done anything wrong apart from being Catholic. He's now getting some cheering and waving. The Rye House plot had also been a bit of a wake-up call for the population. All that talk about a Catholic invasion had gone nowhere except to lead to an assassination attempt on the king and his brother. That might be the real problem, and not some wanker's imagination of things that haven't happened. Louise de Kerouel has emerged as a power player during all this strife. She went with the excluders for a while just to protect herself, but has really remained royal. Then, 1683, bit of trouble for Louise. Hortense Mancini, her nephew Philippe de Vendôme, who popped in for a visit. Known as a banger of women and very good at it. He wanted a bit of Louise and she was charmed by a young Frenchy hot guy. At the same time, it seems Charles wasn't up to looking after Louise's sexual needs. In the old times, Charles would have probably just gone with the flow, but now he's a bit like a jealous husband. His dear Fubs, that's his name for Louise, Fubs, flirting with a young Frenchie is too much for him. He'll send an order for Philippe to get out of England. Philippe won't get out of England. Charles will have him in for a chat, telling him to be on a water Uber within 48 hours, or he'll be in a swimmer within 48 hours. Louise still has some boo-hoo-hooing in her, and that'll do the trick. The court is watching to see if her influence is gone, but Charles will act like a giddy schoolboy with lots of public kisses and cuddles. He's happy to have domestic stability back. Nell Gwynne is still there and still playing the other role, hostess for small intimate dinner parties, with Louise doing the big public ones. Really though, if we look at the composition of courtiers, including Louise, if you like, there is no one real power player at this time. Charles has retained secrecy, or he just doesn't have any firm policies, one of the two. He's still very changeable. Charles will finally manage to get Danby out of the slammer. It was a hard slog. He had to change over judges for a start, and even then it was difficult. In the end, four lords stumped up a huge £20,000 bail for him to get him out on a promise that he'll turn up to the House of Lords when they next sit. The other thing probably on Charles's mind, or it should be, is Parliament. There is nothing to compel a king to call an election, and Charles certainly doesn't want a Parliament. Nice then that Louis XIV doesn't want it either. England remaining neutral is allowing him to have another go at the Lowlands, Luxembourg this time. An English Parliament would be pushing Charles to go and support the duchies. So no Parliament for Charles means peace, and it also means pocket money coming in from Louis. Some of his courtiers are pressing for Parliament under the spirit of the every 3 years minimum rule. But Charles does not want those Whigs back with their crazy Catholic invasion theories, and fair enough. We've all settled down back to our normal lives. It's not much fun living with existential threats, even though that seems to be the standard for us. Our governments and media constantly tell us about bad humans or bad events about to happen to cause us much harm. Yes, the Kiwis are bound to invade Australia any minute. Whigs around London are also reported to be keeping very quiet and not holding meetings about anything much at all. They know they've been done. James Duke of York has been quietly invited back to the Privy Council and nobody's making a fuss. Titus Oates has made one last big noise. He's called the Duke of York a traitor. Arrest that fuckwit. Guilty of saying naughty things, Titus. £100,000 fine, which we all know he can't pay. Put him in irons then and toss him into a debtor's prison, and he better hope that James doesn't become king. James will also be restored as Lord High Admiral. Not officially. Charles is officially the Lord High Admiral to comply with the Test Act, but James is doing the work. Just as well. The Navy had suffered while James was out. Samuel Pepys had kept it going, but then those bloody Whigs tossed Samuel Pepys in the tower because he was friendly with James. Pepys is back out, so the three lads, Pepys, James and Charles, will work on a scheme to restore the Navy. Charles will also commission a survey of the coasts, which will end up as the published Great Britain's Coasting Pilot. That's great for navigation. William of Orange will notice that English ambassadors aren't coming in. Charles is pissed off that William and Monmouth had been hanging out and trying to damage the Duke of York's position as heir to the big chair. So William's ambassador will visit Charles and say, "Hey, mate, you got this all wrong." Charles will say, "It is as if a man going to a brothel should ask me to believe and accept the excuse that he'd done no wrong because he'd only gone in to convert people." "Oh, yeah, well," says the Duchy, "of course going to a brothel makes you suspect, but you have to take into account the character of the man, who could be a man of probity and honour. You should be prepared to listen to his explanation." "Yeah, great," says Charles. "You want me to believe that William is a man of probity and honour, and even worse, you think the same of my lad James, Duke of Monmouth? Oh, piss off, mate." Christmas 1684, and Charles has got a dodgy leg. Gout and ulcers, and it's no daily walk in St. James. He's moody and perhaps thinking a bit about heaven. Somewhere in here, we don't know exactly where, he will quietly convert to the Catholic stuff, and perhaps he is thinking still about the succession. Well, who knows what's going on in his brain, not me. His old mate Father Huddleston did the converting. It seems he is back to being unhappy with his brother, who, like Henry V, seems to be rather keen at getting the silly hat. There's reports that Louise arranged for Monmouth to come and see Charles and that Monmouth went away happy. 1st of February 1685, and oddly enough, we have some writings about Charles's evening from a churchy type who wrote mainly because he was stunned when he went with Charles to see Louise and there was £20,000 on the table being gambling stakes. And on a bloody Sunday, too. Oh, the outrage. Point is, on this particular evening, Charles was in a very good mood. Louise was there, and Babs was there, and Hortense Mancini also back, and she was there. There's a Frenchy lad singing romantic songs in the background. These three women are no longer the hot young things that they were, but they're Charles's dearest friends. Plenty of people are saying they hadn't seen Charles in a better mood. The evening comes to an end and Charles is off to bed. The Lord-in-Waiting will have a restless night. Nothing unusual. Charles has got all those bloody clocks that keep chiming out of sync. And he's got his big old dog pack in the bedroom with all the snuffling and farting and moving about. Even Charles, a usual heavy sleeper, is tossing and turning. 1st of February 1685 and Charles is pale. And after a quick visit to the Dunny, is bedridden. He's having trouble speaking, but for some reason can mutter in French. They will carry him to his chair so his barber can shave him. They'll let out a shriek. In come the doctors to bleed him. Yeah, it's usually no help at all, but in this case, maybe it is. They will shave his head, of course, and oddly enough, that seems to work. Speech is back. It's been enough, though, for us to go to DEFCON 3. Guards everywhere, ports closed, and communication with Monmouth and William of Orange is stopped. Lord Lieutenants across the country are on high alert. Lord of Mayor of London will send a letter of loyalty to the Duke of York. Common smellies will gather to boo-hoo-hoo together. A couple of days later, and Charles is down again. He can take 58 different drugs. And goodness knows what was in them. And it'll get plenty of enemas, of course. Yeah, they love making you shit. Louise will send her goods to the house of the French ambassador in case shit gets real. No new arrangements have been made for the succession. In come the mob. Ministers, magicians, doctors, servants, all of his sons, except Monmouth. There's 75 people in the room. That's not good. Duke of York, of course, is there. Catherine the Queen is holding his hand. Charles will apologise that his death is taking so long. He's being very much the stoic. Catherine isn't that well and will beg his forgiveness because she needs to go and have a good lie down. Charles will say, rather I should seek your forgiveness. James, Duke of York, is boo-hoo-hooing. Charles will ask James, Duke of York, to look after Babs, Louise and Nell. And make sure Nell's lad, the Duke of St. Albans, gets a good education. He'll say sorry to his brother James for any nastiness during his life. Mary Magdalena, Duchess of York, is in the room having a good boo-hoo-hoo. Magicians are in a huff because he isn't talking about them, and they suspect he has converted. Whatever's going on with Charles is unknown to us, but there is an opinion that his experiments led him to taking all sorts of shit, so mercury poisoning is a decent bet, and if it was, then the bleeding might have actually helped. Time for the churchy guys to put on the last magic show. Anglicans, of course, but Charles will refuse the bread without yeast. He says, yeah, it won't make any difference by now as to how God sees me. Early next morning, Charles wants the curtains open to see the sunrise. 8 a.m, his speech will fail again. 10 a.m, he's in a coma. Midday, 6th of February, 1685, and 55-year-old Charles II, dead. And the common smellies are totally miserable. And, oh fuck, will it be York or Monmouth? So we had the last season of The Last Kingdom, and they just tossed history right out the window with that one. They just wanted to kill off characters episode by episode so that Uhtred, son of Uhtred, could do a lot of boo-hoo-hooing. Pretty annoying that they didn't give Æthelflaed either the battles of Woden's Field or the Siege of Chester. They just had a die of whatever. That was annoying. Ted the Elder turned out to be a total dick. So, I don't know, wasn't that satisfying for me. And for a book, I had a crack at Robert Graves. Normally, I love Robert Graves, but this one, The Golden Fleece, yeah, I think people might like it more than me. It's a detailed account of Jason and the Argonauts, with every bit of Greek mythology and the pagan theology tossed in, and it's very long and slow and detailed. But there you go. If you're interested in Jason and the Golden Fleece, you probably couldn't get a better book, I have to say. Just not necessary for me. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. So how about a bit of Caro Emerald and lipstick on his collar? Hope to see you next week. Bye.